Happy New Year and welcome back to the Bob Davis Podcast. Getting started on 2017, I am outside International Market Square here in South Minneapolis on Lake Street getting ready to go in. I thought about all the places I've done podcasts over the years, and I decided that I couldn't go to a bowling alley because I've done that. Couldn't go to a grocery store because I've done that. Couldn't go to a bar. I mean, there's a ton of places, so I thought, I'm going to go here. I've never been here before, so we're going to walk in and in podcast 586, offer some random thoughts and kind of a walk and talk through the International Market here in the old Sears building in South Minneapolis in podcast 586. And as I walk in, you know, this weather we're having is kind of strange, and we're supposed to get cold. We're supposed to go through another deep freeze, which means you could have emergency plumbing or heating problems, and that means Ryan Plumbing and Heating in St. Paul for home or business. And it doesn't matter whether you live in one of those 1920 buildings with the radiators that heat, or a brand new building, whether you have in-floor heat or heat along the baseboard, or you have plumbing issues because it's cold and you have the constant heating and freezing, which can cause broken pipes. You want reliable service when things break and when it comes to making sure that these systems are all operating. And I urge you to think of Ryan Plumbing and Heating in St. Paul. They've been around for four generations, quality replacement and repair of all plumbing, heating, and air conditioning systems, residential and business installation of all sorts of things like in-floor heat and putting in more efficient heating systems and AC systems for next summer and upgrades. Call Ryan Plumbing and Heating in St. Paul, 651-224-4771. In Minneapolis, call 612-927-6488. Metro-wide from St. Paul, and that means the suburbs too, wherever you are. Four generations, quality replacement and repair of all plumbing, heating, and air conditioning systems, residential and business, Ryan Plumbing and Heating. And also check them out online at ryanplumbing.com. Well, I was going to go drive around, and I did a little bit today, drive around and try to find a place to do a podcast. And I've done so many podcasts from remote locations, bowling alleys, and the grocery store, that I've decided to come here to International Market Square, which is on Lake Street in South Minneapolis. Now, back in the day, this used to be a Sears. Sears, and this is really cool, but in the 20s, Sears and Montgomery Ward's, I think Montgomery Ward's probably later, but Sears built these massive regional headquarters with a tower that had offices in it, and then they had warehouses and stores in cities like Minneapolis so they could distribute products. And this place is pretty dang cool. It was built in the 1920s, 1928, 27. And there are some large photographs here as you go through this entryway that are pictures of the street where this place was built before they built it. Brick streets and streetcars and, you know, what the Sears looked like inside. Now, today, after an awful lot of government money has been spent to renovate this place, we have the headquarters of Allina Health. There is a hotel here in the parking lot. I don't know if you remember, if you actually are old enough, you do remember that the parking lot of this place was just massive. And so now there's a hotel on where the parking lot used to be, and then and actually a pretty cool apartment complex. So before I came over here, I had in my mind the question of, well, gee, I don't remember what the details were. They have done a number of different things, a number of different subsidies, millions of dollars. The entire project was $192 million. And there was federal support due to the building's historic preservation needs. And the thing that's interesting is, I mean, I looked it up. There's been tens of millions, if not hundreds of millions of dollars in subsidies given to the people that developed this property. And it built, when they built it in 1928, this place was $5 million. And it took a year, and there were no public subsidies to build this thing. And of course, the world was very, very different then. And it's kind of fun. If you do a little research on the project, you'll get a sense of how much money it cost to do this, whether it was money that came from Housing and Urban Development or Met Council grants. And we're not talking about small grants. And then the market itself here is really only about half the bottom floor of the old Sears building, if that. And it has been struggling for the past 10 years. So there's about 100, I don't know. It's hard for me to count, I would say. Let me look around. I guess there's about probably about 100 people here, if you include the people working in here in various stalls and restaurants. And, you know, looking at those pictures and knowing the neighborhood, I've been driving through here and going to various stores along this part of Lake Street for years. It actually makes me wonder. This New Year's, like any New Year's, it's about a clean slate, right? It's a change. It's a new beginning for all of us. We always think as the moment turns. Now, this New Year's Eve, I really didn't do anything. I stayed home and watched Ray Donovan and a couple of other shows that I like. And I looked up and it was almost midnight. In fact, it was midnight. And I thought, wow, I remember the days when I used to go to parties and we'd run out and lay in the street. And generally for me, I was always working New Year's Eve, whether it was an event or on the radio or something. So New Year's Eve doesn't carry the same impact for me as some people in the sense that I don't drink. I really don't party. My idea of partying is watching TV and drinking coffee these days. But it was an interesting New Year's, to say the least. I mean, I'm certainly happy about it. But we're always optimistic when the clock ticks over to 2017. 2016 was one way. 2017 will be another way. And, you know, I think, well, how was my year? How was your year? How do you compare and judge your year of 2016 from other years? And I thought, well, how do I know that 2016 was so great or so better? I mean, I've had bad years, don't get me wrong, and I can tell you 2016 wasn't as bad as some years that I've had. It wasn't great, but it wasn't the worst year ever. Some people are very upset because their favorite recording artist or movie star died this year. That's one of the reasons people think it's a bad year. Or, you know, your candidate won or didn't win, which makes it a great year. Or if your candidate lost, it makes it a bad year. Or the year coming is a bad year. Or you moved, you had a baby, you got married, whatever. A lot of kids here today, a lot of families here. But the thing is, life doesn't follow these neatly defined month and year delineations. Life cycles operate on a different time interval, and we are so used to being to these markers. It's Memorial Day, it's 4th of July, it's, you know, Labor Day, it's Thanksgiving, it's Christmas, it's New Year's, it's Super Bowl time, it's this, it's that. We're operating on an artificially created clock of events. And when we get to New Year's, we expect things to change because, after all, it's a new year, right? We make decisions. We make decisions individually and collectively. And, those collective and individual decisions are received differently by different people. For instance, hey, kids, we're going to move. Well, maybe they don't want to move. We're going to relocate to a different state. We're going to move down the street. Whatever. We do these things that we do. We take actions, and we do them for the best reasons we can think of when we're working to do them. Sometimes we don't have reasons. Sometimes we just throw stuff against the wall and see what sticks. I've certainly done that. When I was younger, people asked me all the time, why are you doing that? And most of the time, I couldn't tell them why I was doing that. I just did it. No matter what we do, no matter what reason we have for doing things, it takes a while to find out whether you made a huge mistake or whether it was a good idea. And it's just like this place. I'm sure that it was put together and renovated with all the greatest intentions. But in fact, it's been struggling for a long time. And as I said, the neighborhood struggled for years before this. And I'm not sure it looks that much better out there as I stare through the gloom of this rainy, cloudy day with freezing rain and everything else today in the Twin Cities. And then getting back to those pictures, you know, the world certainly has changed since the 1920s when this place was built. I am fascinated with the 1920s. You know, this Minneapolis was a much smaller city. Now, they had more residents. I think, what are we up to now? Something like 340,000 in Minneapolis, and I speak for Minneapolis. St. Paul, it's worse. But the city basically stopped. There were no suburbs. The suburbs in the 1920s were little more than train stops in those days. If you, I live in St. Louis Park. I don't usually tell people where I live, but I live in St. Louis Park. And St. Louis Park's downtown area was just simply a train stop. And there's a little section of St. Louis Park that was built in the 1920s, and that was the town. There's a picture at a restaurant in St. Louis Park of Excelsior. There used to be a station, an Esso station, on the corner of France and Excelsior. And France was a dirt road. And Excelsior, I don't remember in that picture if it's a dirt road or not, but that was the 50s. So West Minneapolis in the 1920s was the hinterlands. The Calhoun Beach Club was built in 1928. It fell victim to the Depression and never opened, largely because there was nothing out there. The much vaunted streetcars in Minneapolis that everyone talks about how great they were, they stopped at 50th Street, and that's as far west as they went. And like the buses, so you could get on the streetcar and you could go out to 50th Street and nickel it. That was the end of the line, which is, you know, really practically the city of Minneapolis. And, you know, I know you could take them to St. Paul, but I would imagine it probably took a good part of the morning or afternoon to get from Minneapolis to St. Paul and back on the streetcar. And you see these pictures of the brick streets and the, you know, the wood frame houses and the old cars and stuff. And it just makes me wonder what that time was like. My mom used to say that I was reincarnated from the 1920s because I was so fascinated with them. We lived in a building in Chicago that was built in the 1920s, actually 1922, and I loved that place. Just, and I'll tell you a little bit more about it as I walk through here. But the thing I wanted to say today, and the thing that is just something that is important to me to say in this podcast, is that you know, I've had some interesting exchanges on Facebook this holiday because I've had time to just kind of go on Facebook, and I've kind of gone on other people's pages and made comments and stuff. And people have the most intense reactions to things. And it made me think. I got very introspective after a couple of pretty intense exchanges. We live in a time of intense chronicling. It's almost like the journal of a teenager, where every event, every feeling, every slight and joy on a minute-by-minute basis is recorded and somehow exaggerated. And you look back on those journals, you know, and I don't know if you journal. I journal when I was a teenager, and whenever I've been able to find them and uncover them, they're all over the place. I worry because they're all over the place. But when I look back on the journals that I used to type on my Royal 440 typewriter in the middle of the night or write in the spirals, you know, 20 years later, 30 years later, 40 years later, you look back and you say, you know, I don't even remember this person that I'm talking about, or I don't even remember what the slight was, or really, in some cases, even the joy. Certainly, you remember some things because memory is selective, and you remember things that are different. You ever go to a high school reunion and people tell you stories about yourself, and you're like, I have no idea what you're talking about. I don't remember that at all. And then sometimes you do remember, but I was at some reunion last year, and somebody said, do you remember this, that, and the other thing? And I was like, you know, I don't at all. But Facebook and Twitter and the internet remembers every little thing that has happened, and it gets magnified. So what happens is the perception of perspective and context, which is so important in human decision-making, is raised or lowered, depending on what you're talking about. Because I think part of selective memory is also, it comes with age, and it comes with living, and it comes with life experience, and it provides context and perspective when you start to think about how to make decisions. For example, almost everybody has bought a first house, and they have had experiences related to the first house. So when they go and they buy another house, they don't make the same mistakes again. Or you make mistakes with credit and you learn your lesson and you don't make those mistakes anymore. My son was saying something happened with his credit because he was running it up to the limit or something like that. And he was like, I wish somebody would have told me that. And I said, those are the things no one tells you. That's the, you know, you learned an important lesson because it happened to you. Nobody's going to tell you about something like that. That's an experience. That's perspective. That's, to a lesser extent, context. And lest you think this is a podcast about nothing, I think context is one of the most important things in understanding what is being said and done and written about and the media that's going on today in almost every single thing that happens. Now, my favorite example of this holiday season, and by the way, I talked about context. Both my son and I in the last podcast talked about this question of context. But my favorite example of this during the holiday season, you know, I took a lot of time off, so I had time to think and do and just relax. And it was great because, you know, I don't do that very often. I've worked a lot of holiday seasons. I've been on the air on Christmas Day and New Year's Day and filled in here and there. And this is the first time in a long time where I just, you know, chilled out the entire time. But one of the things that happened this holiday season was we had a number of celebrity deaths, which were very high profile. And suddenly, it wasn't so much the comments on social media. I don't know about you, but I get very irritated with everybody posting pictures of Prince, let's say, as though he's a god, you know. And I have nothing against Prince, but it's just people change their profile pictures, and it's a tribute, but it's a little ridiculous because then you have the reaction where what did they say? Isn't this terrible? All these celebrities that are dying. This is terrible. What's going on? And it proves people are getting their news from disjointed and distorted posts on social media, whether it's tweets or links or pictures or memes or comments, which are not providing context. And I mentioned in one of the podcasts, something like 60% of the population gets its news now from social media. So this is important. And people were coming up to me and saying things like I said, they were saying, this is terrible, all these celebrities dying. I got to keep my voice down. What's the context? You know, that was my first reaction. First, there's a BBC article which basically says that we didn't have any more celebrity deaths this year than last year. We had a number of first quarter celebrity deaths which were high profile, but basically it's the same. Well, what's the context? The context is, do you know how many people in the world die every day? Every day, okay? We have 55 million people dying each year in the world. 151,000 per day. That's about 6,000 people an hour. And it's terrible. It's death. But consider this. We have something like, I wrote this down on a little piece of paper. We have something like 131 million people born every year in this country. 360,000 per day. 15,000 people being born per hour. And it makes me think about the time that my son was born. When my son was born, and I'm sure if you have children, you have this same feeling, this wonderful feeling, remembering when your son or daughter was born, or when someone close to you had a baby, or, you know, the joy of that occasion of having a baby, and the reverse of it, the sadness when somebody dies. And the fact is, the context is, celebrities go with all the other people that pass on a given day, and they do not take their celebrity with them. Celebrity, rich, poor, famous and infamous meet their maker in a sort of mortal equality, just the way they enter this world. You start out as a baby, you have the potential to influence the whole world, you live your life, you have your experiences, you're on your track. But there were people that actually thought this was an indication that something somewhere was deeply wrong or awry. Why would you think that? Well, you don't have the context because you don't think to ask how many people die every day, for example. They were saying, why? How is this possible? What can be done? And I thought it was a joke, but it's not a joke. You know, Princess Leia was taken from us. Of course, Princess Leia is Carrie Fisher, who is a human being who is, along with everyone else on this planet, not going to get out alive, right? Prince was taken from us too soon. Well, that's probably fair enough if you really think someone like that is important to you in your life. But then there was all these articles that said, well, you know, given Carrie Fisher's death and blah, 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 people in their 60s and 50s are dropping dead. Why is this? Well, I've lost some good friends this year who literally did drop dead. And it happens. And it happens to people in young and late middle age all the time. It is not uncommon, especially for people who have had a history of drug abuse. And especially with people who have a current drug abuse history or alcoholism or something to that effect. You know, back in the 1920s, as long as we're on the subject, people didn't live past 50 most of the time. It was unusual for people to be 70, 80 years old. That was really old in the 1920s because, you know, we didn't have the medical science that we have now that essentially keeps people alive, and we didn't know what we're supposed to do. And people are going to pass. It also reminds me, as I walk through here, that time changes. And not only does time changes everything. And there are things that we want changed, and they do. And there are things that we do not want changed, and they change anyway. We as I said earlier, I lived in an apartment building that was built in the 1920s, 1922, as I recall, in Chicago. And I can still remember Mr. Coquelicher, who was the building caretaker, shoveling coal into the furnace. It was a coal furnace, and it got really hot. And it drove the water up into the pipes and heated the apartments that had transoms. And the idea was that you put water in the pans over those radiators and you open the windows in the winter and you got fresh air and things like that. I mean, and I used to think that was magical. And we lived above a bakery, and I'd wake up on summer mornings and I could smell the bakery, and I just loved it, and I wanted to go back in time so bad. But things have changed. Now, that building, oddly enough, is still there, and I go back and I walk through the building and I walk in the parking lot, and there are things there. There's a no parking sign that was painted probably in the 1930s that is still there, which I thought was amazing the last time I was there. But eventually that building will go away too. We take action to change things. But sometimes we get a reaction that we weren't looking for or thinking about. And we have to take a new action, we have to wait for a reaction, and we have to make conclusions, and then we have to figure out how we're going to continue the process. Everything is a process, and therefore everything is connected to what came before. And in a democratic society, this process of change can be agonizing. If you add modern media to that, especially social media, and this meticulous chronicling of everything that happens and every slight and every frustration and everything that happens on it doesn't matter what side of the political spectrum you're from, any process of change from any political direction, any process of social change can become exhausting. You know, and sometimes change is driven by some new thing. A telephone can drive change. Think of the people that used to walk through this building in the 1920s and 30s. Telephones were new to them. So technology is a huge factor in spurring change. But so is politics sometimes, and sometimes an individual changes things. Jimi Hendrix changed things forever because of what he did with his music. He changed everything. He changed current music. He changed the people's perceptions. Maybe in the grand sweep of time, people won't think it's as important, but I have a feeling Jimi Hendrix will have a place in history. And again, in this time of intense chronicle, we are playing a numbers game. We are looking at responses to social media posts that live forever. And you have all these numbers in your head. 14 people here, 23 people there, 84 million here, 1.5 billion there, a trillion here, 80,000 hectares, 2,000 acres, 33,000 square feet. And none of it means anything unless you have some context and perspective. And this is why I guess I'm glad that this building is still here. I wish it was still a Sears. But really, what I'm talking about is resisting change where the building might be raised to make room for something else or nothing, right? And it's probably the one reason I am so interested in history, because you stare at those pictures down the hall here of Lake Street before they built the Sears building back in 1927 and 28 when they were surveying. And you see the kind of the hustle of activity on Lake Street in South Minneapolis at the time, not unlike hundreds of other streets in 14 or 15 of the biggest cities in the United States 80 or 90 years ago. What was it like? What were the people like? Where did they come from? Where did they go? What did they do when they went wherever they went? What did the brick streets feel like on a hot summer morning? Or what kind of smells were there? The smells in this place right now are wonderful because you've got all kinds of things cooking. But what about then? You know, I look at that and I think, well, what did the streets smell like? What were the restaurants like? What kind of plates did they use? How much or how little did things cost by our standards? And really, what did those people think about? Because I don't think human nature changes. I just wonder what kinds of, I think the things that drive us perhaps are probably pretty much the same, but they had different context 80 or 90 years ago. What drove people? What did they think about? What were the pressures and the pleasures of their life? And how were their pressures and pleasures of life different from ours? Going back to the apartment building back in Chicago, you know, I used to just sit there and pretend it was the 1920s. And I tried to figure out what it would be like to live in this building at that time. And that was just because I was a weird idiot savant kid. But when you study details about history, it does give you perspective and a window into the future. You might not be right about the future that you see, but you're thinking about it. And so you're constructing a small part of history. You are building some form of context and perspective, which is so important in being able to make decisions and think about things. And this is one of the reasons I get so frustrated with modern media, whether it's talk radio or CNN or anything else, because it's just people sitting around guffawing, engaging in gossip and, you know, judging each other and people. And, it really bothers me. You know, people talk New Year's resolutions. I really never make resolutions at New Year's. I do take breaks at the appropriate times, and I reevaluate winter, spring, summer, and fall. So quarterly, what I'm doing. And I take the time to think about what I want to do in the future, and I try to, avoid something that Steve Jobs talked about, which has to do with your perception of reality and the actual real list of things happening and the context and perspective around it. I have learned to make changes slowly and carefully. Because sometimes, and again, getting back to my statements about how I used to throw things up against the wall, I mean, I don't think I thought too much about anything. I think I would just snap my finger and I would start off doing something. And sometimes that worked out really well. I was willing to take a major, I was willing to take a risk to move. I was willing to take a risk to buy a car. I was willing to take a risk to do something I wanted to do. It never bothered me, with the potential of the outcome. But that's beginning to change a little bit with me. Because sometimes the thing that I changed, I didn't need to, and vice versa, and it provoked other change I didn't need. Sometimes you don't find out until later that a small change that you made took you off course in a big way. A lot of people worried about the future these days for various reasons. Different people from the people before that were worried about the future back before the election. Now there's a whole bunch of other people who are now suddenly worried about the future. They're worried for the same reasons that the other guys were worried before, or different reasons, depending on what part of the spectrum, the quote-unquote spectrum, which is also a construct, where they're coming from. We're jumping on every chronicle of proof, every second of detailed history, this or that. We're looking at things very closely. This is going to happen. That is going to happen. This one said this. This one said that. We have to do this. We have to do that. And you have lots of people fussing and fighting, you know, responding and reacting, whether it's in traffic, giving people the finger, or it's on Facebook, threatening people with bodily harm because they don't agree with them, or whatever. Are we thinking about where change comes from? Where does change well up from? It's like a force of nature. It bubbles up from the surface. An earthquake is an expression of energy. You know, a volcano is an expression of energy. Change is way down there in the magma or in the crust, and it's working its way up. Where does it come from? Why does change need to happen at any one particular time? And we have to think, I think, about the changes that we've made in our own lives, why we made them, and think internally instead of pointing and saying, they're doing this, and they're doing this to me, and this is happening, and I don't like it, and they should be stopped. Think about the changes in the nation or the world. Where does that kind of movement well up from, and how fast does it happen? When does it start, and how do you tell the difference from discontent to a movement that can shake the world, as we have seen in every different time in history that you want to talk about? What do you call that movement, whatever it is? What words do we use to refer to a movement? The revolution, let's say. Why do we use that word? The Enlightenment. Why do we use that word? Where do those words come from in our language, in the English language? Where do we get these ideas? My sense is that change happens more slowly than we would like to believe. We are more collectively involved energetically than we would like to believe. And maybe we're even involved unconsciously in this process of change. This place was a Sears store for many, 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 many lifetimes, right? And it pretty much deteriorated over the years, but it's still here. So change has happened. The building has changed. It could have been torn down. It wasn't. What are the effects of that change? Why did they do it? What words did they use? That kind of thing. And a good question, I think, in 2017, is what kind of change I am contributing to unconsciously. This is being aware of your own thoughts and actions. What are you a part of? What am I a part of? What does it do? What is its purpose? What is my purpose? You know, so many people these days, I think, do things to be famous. They want it to be known. They're on Twitter or they're on Facebook. They want it to be known that they're doing these things. And I always throw out the disclaimer that, I'm on Facebook because I have to promote my business. But I get on Facebook and I look at things and I comment on things and I do things sometimes to be known as well. But I think the motivation for a lot of people at all levels in our society is to be known, to be beautiful, to be thought of as a hero, to get credit, to stand on top of the hill and have people recognize you as a contributor. Someday, though, we're all going to be one of those numbers at the end of the year, no matter how famous, no matter how many tribute videos and likes we have on social media. Why do we do the things we do? Now, this is not a statement, in my mind, of judgment. It's just a question. Why do we advocate for the things we advocate for? That's for you and I to answer ourselves. And I'm asking myself why, and it's not an easy question to ask of yourself. This is the kind of stuff I think about when I'm walking around alone on the day after New Year's 2017. Why do I do this podcasting thing? And the answer is, briefly, it was momentum in the beginning. I wanted to stay in touch with the listeners to my radio show after I got fired, but I have changed so much since that time, and I've developed into something much deeper and much better in terms of, I think, in terms of what I'm doing. Because I'm not doing it to be known. I'm doing it because it's part of what I am, to express this process of expressive. I've been like this since I was a kid. I can remember making my own newspaper when I was 8 or 9 years old, first job at 15, starting radio at 12. And I would have done this anyway. I didn't do the radio thing because I wanted to be known. I did it because I thought it was cool. And so I'm not sure that I do it for approval, and I just do it because, I certainly do appreciate likes and shares. I'm not going to say that I don't, but I do this because this is what I do, and I love the process of creating audio product and sharing my insights, whether it's programming a radio station or doing a podcast. There's something about it for me, and it doesn't have the same effect when I do videos as it does doing this. So I think in general this past year, things have been pretty good, all things considered, in the podcasting world. I certainly have stayed away from endorsing and telling you what to think. I've avoided passing judgment and striking out, and I will continue to do that because it's changed how I do and what I do for the better. And some of it is a process of learning that came from actually touring the country and travel and covering politics. But that process of change continues no matter how carefully I try to manage it. And so in the next few days or weeks, I'm going to share some thoughts about my former business radio and my current business podcasting with you, the relationship between the two, and plot a little bit of a course for the future and discuss some of the changes I am about to make in my tiny corner of the world. Again, this year, 2016, this last year, has affected me pretty deeply. And I will tell you, and I've said it before, and I'm going to say it again, I don't like what I see in the discourse. I don't like what I see in the media, especially in the so-called new media and social media, but also in traditional media broadcast, whether it's TV or radio. I don't like what I see in the way that all of us talk about what has become known as politics, but really is just gossip. Those of us out here engaging in the day-to-day gossip and the people listening to that and emulating it to the degree they do so, I think have a less effective influence on the people who are actually governing, whether it's the elected officials or the people that work for them in the bureaucracies. I think sometimes they just keep doing the things that they do, and how can they possibly consider people who are acting in such an immature manner? And that, by the way, that is notwithstanding my harsh criticisms of the pernicious power and the dangerous and malicious power of government. You know, sure, we all want to laugh about Mariah Carey's run-in with the NBC producers over lip-syncing on New Year's Eve, or Carrie Fisher's mother dying right after, not laughing at that, but talking about it, Carrie Fisher's mother dying right after she died. And of course, the thing that just took me by surprise this current time frame is Sean Hannity's sudden friendship with Julian Assange, which is hilarious when you consider that so many people on, you know, in the moderate Republican camp hated Julian Assange. But now that he says that Russia didn't attack, that didn't hack the United States or whatever they hacked or allegedly hacked, suddenly he's their best friend. That kind of stuff is interesting. I'm not sure it has any impact on the future of the country and all of us as individuals. So I raise my coffee cup from International Market Square to 2017. Let's get started. Happy New Year. You know, it's always been true that when you take time off, that first show back, that first day back is always a little rocky till you get going again. It's like starting all over again. So now I've kind of broken through to 2017. So thanks for listening to Podcast 586. You know, I mentioned Ryan Plumbing earlier. Ryan Plumbing continues to grow, partially because of the podcast advertising on the BobDavisPodcast.com, and because it's a great business, Ryan Plumbing and Heating. So if you're a plumber, pipe fitter, sheet metal worker, HVAC control specialist, because Ryan has been experiencing the steady growth, it doesn't matter where you're hearing this podcast. Maybe you're listening to it in California or in Alabama. You might want to call Ryan Plumbing and Heating because they can put you to work right now if you need to. They're looking for reliable plumbers, pipe fitters, sheet metal workers, HVAC control specialists. You know, if you're in that line of work, call them 651-224-4771 in St. Paul, in Minneapolis, 612-927-6488. You can check them out online at ryanplumbing.com. Got to mention, I found two more books that I have on World War II aircraft. I thought I was done. I had this giant book about engineering systems and all, I mean, this extensive book about the engineering and the ideas behind the fighters of World War II. And then I put it back in my library and I found two more that I haven't read. So I'm back on that. And pilots, you do want to be safe on takeoffs and landings. And for that, Alpha Systems makes the Revolutionary Angle of Attack Indicator. What it does is show you visually a very nice visual display of the amount of lift that your wing is producing. That is so important when you make that final turn to land. Bottom line is Alpha Systems AOA saves lives. Click on the Alpha Systems banners at the top of the Bob Davis podcast page for more info about Alpha's Revolutionary Angle of Attack Indicator. And remember, that's at the Bob Davis podcast. Alpha Systems. Also, thanks for listening on social media. Even though I hate it, I always talk about it. Thanks for the likes and shares on Twitter and Facebook and Instagram. My favorite, of course, is Instagram. And thanks for listening to the Bob Davis Podcast off the page with the streaming feed, which lots of people are listening to at thebobdavispodcast.com. Of course, we are syndicated through iTunes, and it's awesome that you're listening and subscribing off of iTunes. Tune in, Stitcher.com, BlogTalkRadio.com, and of course, right off the page at thebobdavispodcast.com. And thanks for your donations for Mobile Podcast Command. I have a lot of missions planned for 2017, so stand by for more info about that. I really appreciate contributions that I got over the holidays. Ed Nass, thank you. And there's a whole list of other people, so I'll get to that probably in the next podcast. Thanks for listening to Podcast 586, The Bob Davis Podcast. Happy New Year. Bye-bye. This will be the day. Say that I will never